People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note, right here on Fine Music Radio. And in December, let's think of charity. Let's talk about the SA Guide Dogs Association for the Blind, an organization that has always fascinated me. It was founded in 1953, apparently, by Gladys Evans and her guide dog, Sheena. She was a blind lady of great courage and determination, and she trained with Sheena in Leamington Spa in the UK. And on her return to South Africa, founded the first training center in Parkview in Johannesburg. And from those early days, the organization has grown from strength to strength, including the establishment of a purpose-built training center since 1993 with the assistance of Canine Companions for Independence in California. They've also been able to offer service dogs to people with disabilities or those who have special needs. So in other words, not only blind people. With me in the studio to talk about what I think is a fascinating subject is the marketing manager for Cape Town of the SA Guide Dogs Association, Tegan Schwer. And Tegan, welcome.
Thank you so much.
There's so much I want to find out about this organization. First of all, because I love dogs. You know how they say you can either be a cat person or a dog person? I'm sure many people are both. I am a dog person.
I agree with you. I'm a dog person
too. That doesn't mean I don't like cats. Tegan, how did you get involved and how long? Tell me a little bit about how you got involved with this extraordinary organization.
Okay. So the 1st of December was my 5th year at Guide Dogs. I joined after a very good friend of mine who is a mobility instructor, otherwise known as a trainer, for a guide dog trainer. She contacted me to say that they were looking for somebody strong in marketing. And previously, I have been in marketing management in the retail sector, so which means I was marketing manager for shopping malls.
Right.
So from then, after she contacted me, I met with the executive director at that point, who was Malcolm Driver, and we had a lovely discussion. And obviously, like you said, you're a dog person, so am I. I was so excited to have the opportunity to work with dogs, because that's all I thought about. Can you imagine trading people for dogs? How fantastic.
Quite sensible, actually.
Yes. And you know what's been such a great journey is that, you know, having the opportunity to work for guide dogs, you know, as much as it is about the dogs, my love and my motivation is now has changed to the people. I see so clearly, and I'm actually getting goosebumps about it because I'm very passionate about the organization. You know, how these dogs change people's lives and how those people have changed my life. And it's not only the people that have the dogs, it's everybody that's affiliated to the organization, our volunteers, our puppy raisers, our trainers, you know, just people that contact us to find out about the organization. You know, it really has changed my perspective, and it, you know, it is still very much to do with the dogs. It's, you know, there's nothing like being greeted by dogs in the morning, especially friendly, happy dogs. It doesn't matter what mood you're in the morning, they uplift you. And then to have to deal with our clients every day, they just make it completely worth it. So the change has definitely been a good change, and I cannot imagine my life any other way.
My goodness, that's a passionate opening for you, Tegan. But now, just let's talk about the society before us. There's so many questions I want to ask you about training, about dogs, about the various disabilities, which we'll get to, the types of dogs, that sort of thing. How many people are employed by the Guide Dogs Association? Is it a thing that's, is it a voluntary organization?
We are made up of three regions. So our head office is up in Johannesburg, and that there's a very big staff complement there. But for Cape Town, there's only six of us. So it's myself, the marketing manager, and then I have a marketing coordinator, and we make up the marketing department. We have a branch manager who's Cheryl Robertson, as well as she's also a mobility instructor, and then we have another mobility instructor. We have a groundsman and caretaker. Well, really, he just does everything, and he looks after the property, and then we also have a receptionist. So that makes up Cape Town, and then from there we have volunteers and puppy raisers, and then also we have a small office up in Durban.
And this, as a result of Gladys Evans, this is a uniquely South African company at the moment, although it came from ideas in California and in the UK.
So how it actually all works is there's a guide dog federation. It's an international federation. So all the schools around the world all follow the same syllabus, if I can call it that. Mm-hmm. So what happens is a mobility instructor does their apprenticeship for 3 years. It's exactly the same no matter where you go in the world. So not anybody can just wake up one day and decide to train guide dogs. You have to fall under the international federation. So our trainers can go to Australia, they can go to China, they can go anywhere around the world because we all follow the same principles and we all train our dogs the same way. Obviously, you know, there's always innovation, so there's always new training techniques that are introduced, but you know, we will have those specialized people come down to our association and train our trainers on that. So the training is ever growing. It's always, you know, there's new trends, there's new things, and we kept up to speed. And what's really great, and I'm sure we'll touch on it further down, is that because we are part of this international federation, when it comes to our breeding, we can actually bring semen in from dogs in. Well, we're actually doing it with two guide dog schools in America. We're bringing semen in, and what's fantastic is that semen, well, those dogs, let's call them dogs, their bloodlines have already been researched, so we know that we're getting good, solid breeding dogs.
Gosh, my goodness me. Yes, we will touch on that. Now you've intrigued me. Tegan, let's just pause before we get onto the subject again with some music, because that's an integral part of this program as well. And what have you decided to choose for this program?
What I've done is we want to do it a little bit differently. And instead of me choosing five songs, I've asked for five people affiliated to Guide Dogs to assist me with
their songs. That's a very good idea. It's a first on People of Note, I have to say.
Thanks. So I'm going to start with my choice, and that is actually composed, written, and sung by one of our guide dog owners, and her name is Michelle Buerta, and the song is Walk With Me. And she performed it at our gala dinner that we had in October, which I'm sure the listeners will remember. We were on the radio. And you know, it is, when you hear the song, you'll completely understand what a guide dog means to somebody that really needs it, and the loving relationship that dog provides, and also not what the dog provides, but how much that person loves and values that dog. So for me, it's just a really special song, and it really just, yeah, it's what it's all about.
Says everything.
It says everything.
Let's listen. Well, there you are. That song called Walk With Me. And if you listen carefully to the words, I'm sure you realize why it's important to the SA Guide Dogs Association. Who was singing, Tegan?
That's one of our guide dog owners, Michelle Buerter.
So you obviously have people with lots of different talents to actually write a piece and record it and have it published. Yes. Is that available publicly?
Yes, she actually does have a CD. And at the moment, that song is actually on our website because it was just so powerful and it was performed at our gala dinner. We really wanted to make it available for everybody to listen to. So it is on our website.
I know, excellent. We're talking about the Guide Dogs Association of South Africa. And with me in the People of Note studio here on Fine Music Radio this week is Tegan Schwerin, who is marketing manager of the association here in Cape Town. So let's look at some basics and how all this works. I think the very first thing is the breed of dog. You know, you automatically think of a guide dog as a Labrador. Tell me a bit how you decide which breed is best and how you go about it.
All right. So the three breeds that we do use are Labradors, which they're known for, Golden Retrievers, and then also German Shepherds. And what we're doing now, because we're not breeding for show, we mix the two. We mix the Lab and the Golden Retriever together because for us, we want to get the best working dog. So how it all works is we breed all our own dogs up in Johannesburg. And part of the breeding, a few years ago, like I mentioned earlier, because we're part of the International Federation, we started bringing in semen from the two guide dog schools in America to increase the pass rate of our dogs when they go out. So I'm going to start at the beginning so that you can have an understanding. All the dogs are bred up in Johannesburg. The semen that we get from the guide dog schools in America, the dogs will then go to a place called Ornisterpoort where the artificial insemination happens. From there, when the dogs, you know, those they're called brood bitches, not to be rude, but no. That's the correct term for them.
Yeah.
They are guide dog quality dogs. They're just not working dogs, which means as a puppy raiser has one of our dogs that they are raising until they become a guide dog, these volunteer families have the breeding dogs and they are treated as normal pets. So they will be called in at different stages to, you know, to have a litter of puppies, if I can call it that. I want to be
delicate
quite
subject. Yes. But you're doing well.
And so then what will happen is they will come in and be artificially inseminated, and then obviously we will track all the litters that we have, and each litter is born to the letter of an alphabet. It's just a tracking system for us, really. So, and it works in order. And what will happen is when that litter is born, obviously, we have puppy raisers that want to take on a puppy. You know, they're always applying. And a puppy raiser is a volunteer family that takes the dog from about 8 weeks old and raises it till a year. It's a year-long commitment.
And that's when it's treated, as you say, like a normal domestic dog.
Like a normal domestic puppy. Dog. And their responsibility is to socialize the dog. That's their main function, and to do the basic training, like the potty training, getting it to do its business outside, driving in cars, you know, getting it used to noises. So, for example, when we do come to Artscape, all our dogs go to the bathrooms, and we put the hand dryers on. That noise is quite loud. So there's a whole lot of different training techniques that the puppies are exposed to before they come into their formal training, because when they're a year old and they come to that training stage, they need to be quite sound. So really we just focus on the guide dog training side of things.
But wait, the puppy trainers, the raisers, what you call them?
Puppy raisers.
They must be carefully vetted as well, presumably.
Yes.
Because once the puppy is at that home, you will need to know that that's going to be brought up in the correct way. It's not going to be abused. It's not going to be,
correct.
I mean, I presume there's a very strict screening process for
yes,
those people.
Yes, there is. So people can apply, and then what happens is we go out and we interview. Obviously, we need to see their property. We want to make sure that, you know, for us, the dog's safety is priority. So we need to make sure that if there's a pool, it's fenced, because if you know the breed, they love to swim. They really do. So even at the training center, it's all cordoned off because you cannot get them out the pool. So, you know, obviously we look at all the safety issues and we make sure that they can accommodate a dog. Also with our dogs, because they need to be social, and when they are paired with their guide dog owner, they're going to be with them 24 hours a day. So we can't have a family take on a dog and the dog's going to spend the whole day in the backyard. The dog needs to be able to go with them to work if they work, or that person needs to stay home. Well, if they do work, there needs to be somebody at home that can still take care of the dog. But the dog has to be cared for at all times. And we're not, you know, we are lenient. If you are going to the shop and you can't manage to take the dog, it can stay at home.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it is quite flexible in that way.
Is there a failure rate? I mean, have there been occasions where the puppy raises have not been successful and the dog has then not been able to be used as a guide dog?
It wouldn't be a failure on the puppy raiser side. So it wouldn't be the person that's responsible for it. Because, you know, we have quite strict guidelines on how to raise the puppies. And also in the beginning, you know, when they're really small, the puppy raisers and their puppies come into a training session once a week. And then as they get older, it gets less and less and less. And then eventually they come into training. So they are always monitored and they're always under guidance of our mobility instructors, and they have a training manual. And you know, most of them, well, a lot of them are puppy raisers. You know, it's not their first show, it's not their first rodeo,
right.
They've done it before,
right.
So yes, it's closely monitored, and you know, you have to trust them too. So if the dog does fail during the puppy raising period, and it does happen, there's two main reasons why our dogs fail. One is health reasons, and obviously with the breed, you know, we were touching on the breeds that we use, they're very prone to hip and elbow dysplasia. So it would be a health issue, and it's not, those aren't the only health issues that it could have. Dogs go blind, ear problems. You know, our dogs have to be 100% sound because we are giving them to a blind person, or somebody, you know, a differently abled person.
Mm.
So we can't give out something that's going to incur many costs.
Okay, and then after this next piece of music, Tegan, I want to ask you about when the dog comes to you for training, once the puppy raiser has done the job.
Okay.
So what's the next piece of music from your selection, as you said, of various people at the society?
Okay, so the next one is from Val Cotmore, who is one of our volunteers, and she heads up our bookshop at the training center. And her song of choice was from Barbara Streisand, "Something New in My Life." And she chose that song. Well, it is one of her favorite songs because she says she just loves the song. And she thinks Barbara Streisand has the most beautiful voice. And she said, if you listen to the words very carefully, to her, she feels those are the words that would apply to a guide dog owner.
I guess I wanted something new in my life. A new key to fit a new door. To wake and see a different view in my life. What I've been waiting for. Dreams, like everyone, I've had a few in my life. Who knew that this one would come true in my life? I knew the moment that you touched me. You touched me. You're like a sudden breeze that blew in my life. A new face, a new smile. A new song, and now I know I wanted you in my life all along. You're like a chance I had to take in my life. I found you, I couldn't lose you. Difference that you make in my life, the feelings I never knew. I
Well, there's the voice of Barbra Streisand, a unique voice, certainly. You can always identify her, can't you? What was that called, Tegan?
That was called Something New in My Life.
Okay, now we're listening to music to do with the Guide Dogs Association of South Africa. My guest here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio is Tegan Schwerin, who's marketing manager of the association here in Cape Town. We spoke before the music in some detail about the puppy raisers. Now the dog is brought to you and the real training begins.
That's right.
And how do you do that? I mean, I'm sure it's a very long story, but if you can condense it for us,
yes,
a little bit.
Yes, okay. So when they are around about a year old, that's when they come into formal training. So that's when they come into the Guide Dog Center in Cape Town and they start their 6-month training session.
Is it 6 months?
It's between 4 and 6 months, but we say about 6 months. And obviously it varies, you know, also because of we're quite small. We're a satellite center in Cape Town. So it depends on the number of intake of dogs that we have. We only really do classes of 4 at the moment. So, for example, if we have 8 dogs, only 4 dogs will then will go out. They will all be trained together, but they all are at different stages in their training. So we just had an intake on Monday. Our dogs all came back to school, as we call it. Mm-hmm. And they all, you know, some are brand new right off the puppy program. Others have, you know, already been in training for a few months. So they're all at varied stages, but they all get the training every day. So we have 2 mobility instructors, otherwise known as trainers, and the dogs each get a 2 40-minute training sessions a day. And they are exposed to many, many different environments, because obviously, you know, as a guide dog owner or as a working dog owner, your dog is your means of transport. Not saying that you're getting on your dog's back and going to work, no. But your dog is guiding you to the right place, you know, that you need to be at. So, for example, you know, our training center was carefully selected in Claremont because it's very central, you know, for Cape Town. We have the train lines, we have bus routes, we have all those sort of things. So our trainers will then embark on training those dogs in those areas. So there's varied walks that they do. Other days they get into our vehicles and they come to town, they go to Wynberg. You know, they're exposed to very busy streets, they're exposed to residential streets. So their walking is in different areas every day. They don't know any different because they're so used to it. So, and we do this because, you know, the dog has to be equipped to manage the not the stress, because I don't think at that stage it's very stressful for them, but just to be able to maneuver themselves around these areas. So that's how the training starts. And also, to the public, when you're driving past and you see a mobility instructor with one of our dogs, because they're easily identifiable with their harnesses on, only guide dogs have that leather harness, many people think, oh, they just walk in the dogs. But those walks are actually that's the training. You know, we don't take our dogs and do obstacle courses with them in the backyard. And I mean, I think that's the assumption. But no, those are specialized training walks that they are on. So they are learning to stop at down curbs. They're learning to cross roads when it's safe. And many people think that dogs can see robots, which is really, really not true. And dogs are also not colorblind. That's the other assumption. Dogs can see color. They just can't see color as well as we can. So they can't see the green, you know, the green man when the robot changes.
Then do they know? Because that's what that was one of my questions. It fascinates me to stand watching a blind person at a traffic light. The dog is there. The light changes and the dog sits off. How does he know?
A lot has got to do with the marriage between the dog and the person. So the person has to know and also needs to know when it's safe to go. Obviously, the dog is there to prevent them from hurting themselves. So they are trained to walk with traffic, not against traffic. So imagine if you were at an intersection. When the robot changes, the person can hear the cars going past them. Obviously, they can hear the change in the traffic. You know, it's changing. And then if the green man doesn't have that beeping sound to tell them that it's safe to walk, then they have to rely on their hearing to cross the road. And then they will hear when they're walking with the traffic. And the dog is there to avoid obstacles. And we must also remember they are just dogs and they don't want to hurt themselves either.
Yeah.
So as much as they are protecting you, they're protecting themselves and they're very intelligent. So that's how it's the marriage together. the dog is protecting the person, and the person is also making sure that, one, they know where they're going, and two, that they are listening to make sure that it's safe to walk.
So during when this training session has taken place, as you say, 4 to sometimes 6 months, is there a kind of a test, or do you just know that this dog is now ready, it's doing all the right things?
That's where our mobility instructors play a very, very important part. I mean, really, it is up, all of it is actually up to them. Mm-hmm. And that's why they've gone through such a long, apprenticeship. The dogs start just on normal collars and leads for their walks. And as their training progresses, they then get the harness jacket, which is just the leather jacket that's fitted onto them. Then they get walked with that. Then the handle gets added to the harness. So, that's, it's all a progression, and the trainers look out for anything that could potentially be a failure. We're not looking for failure, but obviously we can't put out dogs that are, number one, are not healthy enough to be put out, or if there's any temperament issues, if they're distracted by balls or squirrels, or they just, some dogs just don't want to be guide dogs, and that's absolutely fine. Sometimes you have a dog that's walking and they just, looking around, oh, look, there goes a packet. Oh, look at that nice tree. Our trainers are, they'll spot those things and make the right call.
But I presume then the trainers have to be trained very finely tuned training as well.
And once their dogs are trained, they have to walk under blindfold with those dogs.
Oh, really?
So that's where the big test comes in.
Good grief. That must be, I'd have to do that. Okay, now I'm going to talk about how you match a dog with an owner in a moment, but let's have another piece of music.
Okay.
What is that going to be?
The next one is from guide dog owner Linda Heinecke, and her choice of song is Bette Midler, The Wind Beneath My Wings, and her reason for choosing that song, she says it's one of her all-time favorites. Her guide dog, Portia, she says that Portia is the wind beneath her wings, and she just feels that the song just identifies how guide dogs are heroes to all the people that they serve.
You
There you are, Bette Midler on Fine Music Radio. What was that, Tegan?
That was Wind Beneath Our Wings, Linda Heinecke's choice.
Okay, we're listening to a variety of choices on People of Note this week, which is a good idea of people associated with the Guide Dogs Association here in Cape Town, because I'm talking to Tegan Schwerin, who's the marketing manager in Cape Town of the Guide Dogs Association. We've covered fascinating ground, Tegan, because we've spoken about how the organization has been in existence and what it does, and also this remarkable thing of breeding and training the dogs, the puppy raises, and then the real training. Now the dog is ready to be given to a person who has some sort of blind defect and others, as we'll discover. How do you do that? There must be, to match a dog with a blind person must be really rather tricky.
Yes. So what happens is, while these dogs are being trained, we have people that are applying for guide dogs, you know, all the time. And then, so what happens is our mobility instructors will go out and interview those applicants. And it's about a 3-hour process. It's more of an assessment than an interview, where they will engage with the person as to their needs, their environment, you know, if it's suitable to have a guide dog. If they need a guide dog, you know, because many people apply for guide dogs, but they don't actually, they won't utilize the dog. So that would be more of just having a companion. So if, you know, assess their need of having a guide dog, then they will take them for a walk to see how the speed that they walk, what kind of dog they need, the size of the dog, what is the environment that the dog will be in most of the day. So for example, do they sit at an office all day? You know, they would need to give a dog that would be suitable to be at an office environment all day. You know, so those sort of things are quite critical when they are interviewing the blind person. So once that's been done, that person will then either be accepted or, you know, rejected for a dog. Then that's when the matching starts. So while they're doing all the training with the dogs and teaching them all these new things, that's when our trainers will start picking up, okay, this dog is going to be suited to that person. That's a good trait to that. You know, so this person is needing something like that. Because dogs have different personalities, and our trainers then know the personalities of the applicants on the list. And that's also why it's not a first come, first serve basis. Our dogs are matched to the people that are on our waiting list, not people are matched to dogs, because obviously we are dealing with our dogs primarily. And then once that has happened, once a match has been made, they'll be called to class, which means they will get a phone call and they will say, you've been accepted for a dog. We have this dog of it. Well, actually, they don't find out what dog it is, but we have a dog suitable for you. Are you available to come to class? And it's, you know, we have about 3 classes a year. So it's a specific time, because obviously, you know, the training periods take about 4 to 6 months. And then they will come to class. And it's a 2-week process, so they'll have to take leave from work because it's full time. You move into the training center for 2 weeks. And for those 2 weeks, you actually learn how to work with your dog. So you use the environments and the areas around Claremont. And you go on the trains. We take them down to Fishhook and all that sort of thing. We make sure that they are exposed to all the different avenues that they would need, you know, to work their dog. After those 2 weeks, they go home. And then our trainers go to their houses, and that's known as aftercare. And on aftercare, that is where the dog is going to learn where you need to go. So for example, there's usually, we call it, you know, average on 5 to 6 routes is what we call it. Our trainers will then train the dog and the person on their routes. So if they live in Belleville and they work in town, and they get there by walking to the train station, catching a train, catching a taxi, and then getting to their office. Our trainers will do that route with them every day until they're comfortable. And that usually aftercare takes about 2 weeks. So if we have a class of 4, we have 2 trainers. One trainer will do 2 clients and the other trainer will do the other 2 clients. And every day they have, you know, half the day spent with each applicant training the dog and the person on all their routes, whether it's to go to Pick and Pay, the post office, the bank, work, granny's house, church, the park, whatever. That is what is the dogs and the people are trained on. And the dogs, I know a lot of people think that it's such a little time. You know, people can't understand, 6 months to train a dog, 2 weeks to train them on how to use it, and another 2 weeks to teach them how to get around. The dogs that we use, and most dogs I think all dogs are super, super intelligent. And you know what it is? It's positivity. There is nothing more rewarding to a dog than being made a big fuss of. So that's how our trainers do it. You know, when they get to the right place, when they get to work, when they're training, you have a major fuss over the dog and, you know, praise it and all. And, you know, that dog loves it. I'm sure people that have Labradors, Golden Retrievers and German Shepherds, they know that's the way to get, other than food, that's the way to get through to them.
I was going to ask you that, Tegan. What about the food? The person who owns the dog,
yes.
Do they actually own it? No, they don't, do they? It's on loan.
Well, no, it is their dog. The cost, if I can bring it in now, the cost that they pay for their dog is R5. And they're not paying for their dog.
Five Rand.
That R5 is actually for the contract that they signed. So the dog, you do own the dog. That dog does belong to you. But we have a contract in place that should anything happen, if the dog is mistreated for any reason that you can't keep your dog, it still remains the property of guide dogs.
Right.
So, you know, and even when you have your guide dog, so after you finish your training and your aftercare and you're done and you are having years, you know, the average working life of a guide dog is 10 years. So after 10 years, they go into retirement and we call it average because, again, we're dealing with dogs and things happen. We always are checking up on our guide dog owners. Like I said, you know, and that's what that contract covers, is that we have the right to always check up on the dogs to make sure that, you know, you're doing all right, that, you know, your dog's healthy, because, you know, some dogs get overweight, some dogs have health issues, especially with our visually impaired clients.
Because they can't see.
They can't
that
see.
The dog is getting a bit fat or eating too much.
Yes,
or
that it has a skin condition.
Oh,
or,
true.
You know, that maybe the eye's a bit mucky or something. So our trainers will always go and look at, you know, how everybody's doing.
And is it the responsibility of the owner to, for example, to wash the dog?
Yes.
To keep it.
So once the dog is handed over, once you are on your way with your dog, you are responsible for your dog. So you've got to feed your dog. And we mean you as the blind person. So your wife can't feed the dog. You have to feed your dog. You have to take your dog out for a busy. Or that's what we call them doing their business. They go out for a busy and they're actually trained on that word. So when you tell a guide dog to busy, they will do their business.
Oh,
you know, we don't.
Yes. Train a dog at home.
So busy. when you hear a guide dog owner, when you hear a guide dog owner out saying busy, 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 they're not crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're responsible fully for their dog.
Okay. Let's have another quick music break.
Okay. So the next song is by one of our mobility instructors, Cheryl Robertson, and one of her favorite songs is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. And the reason she chose that song is that she thinks it's a great song to sing along to, and I think everybody would agree. And also, how quick life can change. And I think that's quite relevant with the business that we are in.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter. Didn't leave.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo,
Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo,
Magnifico!
I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Such a famous song, that Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, and obviously we couldn't take the whole piece, so we decided just to take that little section. The choice of?
Cheryl Robertson.
Of the Guide Dogs Association.
Yes.
And Tegan Schwerin is with me. Tegan is the marketing manager of the Cape Town branch of the Guide Dogs Association of South Africa. And this is Fine Music Radio, People of Note. And just in this last link, and look how quickly the time has gone, Tegan, when
yes,
you're talking about
has.
Something you're passionate about.
Very, yes.
As you are. You mentioned at the beginning that it's not only blind people, you've got other services as well.
Yes.
Tell me about those.
So for Cape Town, we only train guide dogs, which is why you know, are focused more on guide dogs today. But what we do is we train service dogs for the physically disabled. So those dogs are trained to help people pick up keys, switch on lights, open doors, put washing into washing machines, take washing out of washing machines, pass you your beer.
No,
you know,
joking.
Those sort of things.
Surely so not the washing machine part.
They do. They are trained to do that.
Good gracious.
They're very special. Hence why I'm so passionate. And then we also train autism support dogs, and that is actually on the rise at the moment. And the main focus of an autism support dog is to offer companionship to children. So those are the three services that we do in terms of dogs. But another focus area is COM, which is the Ken Lord College of Orientation and Mobility. And what we do there is we train practitioners that go out into the rural areas and offer training to the visually impaired community.
Because that's quite an important part, I presume. One thinks of the city and all that, but what about the townships?
Exactly.
What about the rural areas? And what about the costs involved? And also the health of the dog in a slightly poorer area, which
yes.
you must have to monitor very carefully,
yes.
I'm sure.
And because our dogs are trained in urban areas with, you know, that have pavements and crossings and all that, that is the natural environment, if I can call it that, for the training grounds of a dog. So in rural areas, it's a bit different, you know, and that's why we train our practitioners to go and assist the visually impaired.
It's a really fascinating story, this business of guide dogs. And I'd never, you know, obviously you see a lot of guide dogs around. I always seem to see Labradors, by the way.
Yes.
And I've always loved Labradors. And I just wish I could have my own guide dog. But I don't need one, fortunately, yet anyway. But it's a fascinating story. And it's a story of such love and dedication that's been very moving to listen to from
yes.
you. But what about, is it... I asked you earlier if it was a voluntary, and you said no, you've got employees. But do you ask for donations? Do people?
Yes.
How do you keep going financially?
So what we do, obviously, if you do the maths of the amount of guide dogs that we put out in South Africa, obviously we need to raise that money. We don't get any government assistance, so everything that we do is raised by the marketing department, and our donors are all individual donors. We do have some corporates, but the bulk of our income is from, you know, individual donations. So we do various sort of fundraising drives. You know, we have events like the gala dinner, golf days, high teas. And obviously we position it in a way that it's a fundraising event to help guide dogs, because every cent that we make goes towards the breeding and training of working dogs for South Africa. And that cost is quite huge. I mean, the cost to train one dog is 100,000 rand. 100,000 rand.
No.
So, you know, we have got quite a big task of raising money. And we do, because, you know, I think everybody that we deal with is very generous and very giving. And they know that there's a bigger picture. And, you know, we always say, and we're busy with the Two Oceans Marathon at the moment, where we're appealing to runners to please join and run for guide dogs. And, you know, what we're saying is, be the change that you can see. Everybody can be a part of the change. You know, it doesn't have to be monetary. You can offer your time to be a volunteer. But, you know, it's such a wonderful organization. And, you know, it's an empowering organization. And what we do is empowering. And that's our vision and our mission.
Now, if you've tugged at the heartstrings of some listeners like me, How do they get hold of you if they want to find out? And I'm not saying we are making this into a program to raise money for guide dogs, but if someone did want to find out more, having been moved by your story, what would they do? They'd contact you at Claremont.
Yes, they're welcome to contact me at our office in Claremont.
And you'll guide them and tell them what to do.
Yes.
How many dogs do you have out, would you say, in Cape Town at the moment?
In Cape Town, just over 100. Nationwide, about 400. Oh, and so that number's always changing.
Yes, it's a lower figure actually than I thought,
yes.
Funnily enough. But when you consider the costs, as you say, and the intensity of the training.
And capacity.
And the capacity. That's what's come out mostly.
Yes.
Do you have visitors? Do you have a place where people can come visit, or are you not open to the public?
You know, we will accommodate everybody because we know that people are so eager to learn and to be educated on what we do. So we do make it available. Obviously, it all depends on the training center because we can't stop the training process. So, But we have an office and people are welcome to visit us and we will share as much information as we can.
And show them some of the dogs.
Yes, you know, if the dogs are there, we'll take them next door to our training center and introduce them to the dogs, show them how they, you know, how the kennels look and all that.
Oh, gosh. And do you have your own vet? What happens with the health issues of the dogs?
With guide dog owners, they all use their own individual vets, you know, based on where they live. But we make use of different vets for different services. We, you know, Panorama Vet we use CMC, we use Riverside. Yeah, we make use of a few vets.
It sounds as though you have a lot on your plate, Tigran, but something that you love and, as you say, goose flesh stuff.
Yes, this is life.
It is. Now, before you go, one more piece, but tell us what's going to play out on.
Okay, so the last song is by one of our service dog owners, and I'm sure many people will recognize her. She has the standard poodle, the only standard poodle that has been trained for South Africa, who's a service dog, and her song is by Frank Sinatra, I Did It My Way. And if you know Janice, she does everything her way, and her choice is her mother told her that she couldn't have a service dog, and she decided to do it her way and got herself a service dog.
A lovely story. Tegan, it's been uplifting listening to you, and I'm sure you'll come again, and when you do your fundraising things, let us know here at Fine Music Radio.
Thank you so much.
So I was talking to Tegan Schwerin, who's the marketing manager of the Guide Dogs Association in South Africa, and here is Frank Sinatra.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I've loved
laughed and cried. I've had my fill, my share of losing, and now as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And may I say, not in a shy way, oh no, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blow.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Hi, I'm Alan Committee, and this festive season I'm back at the Theatre on the Bay with a brand new hysterical stand-up comedy show called Laughing Matters. In a world where political events move faster than our Springbok backline, where our sports teams can't outscore the Rand exchange rate, and crime means you get everything at a steal, I would suggest that Laughing Matters. So get your belly full of bubbly barrel loads of comic burble. Buy your tickets now. Alan Committee brings you all the Laughing Matters. Theatre on the Bay from December 6 to January 14.